The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Sevilla, Real Madrid, Gerard Piqué blunders, Eintracht Frankfurt, Cream Catalans, Milan in the money, Dortmund are back, Le Classique, and a rebuild in the Netherlands. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. It's week commencing April the 18th. Listener, hello. Thanks for joining Team Totally. We're here with Alvaro Romeo. Hello, Alvaro.
Hello, James.
Hello to you. Also here, James Horncastle. Hello, James.
Hello, everybody.
Woo! On the way, Julien Laurens. He's on his holidays. Mikkel Jongsma, who's in the Netherlands. And Christoph Biermann. A big week for German football news. Crikey. How are you all? Happy Easter, Alvaro.
Yes, thank you. It's been very nice so far. And I swim in the Atlantic as well. Took a day to go to the beach. And yeah, I managed to do it. I thought that I wasn't going to be able to do that. But yes, it was cold, but it was very refreshing. And very soothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a thing in Spain in the same way it is in Italy? The kind of the first bagnetto of the year. You know, you get your first dip.
That's a good point, actually. Everyone says in Spain, yeah, I swim for the first time this year. I think that there is no person in Spain who wouldn't say that. Mm. But then, of course, depending on where you are from, if you are from Malaga, maybe you do it in late February, March. Mm. If you are from Bilbao, you are likely to do it in late April, May. But yes, yep. It is a
in
thing.
In another country altogether. Yeah, ideally. Absolutely. All right, well, a big week for all sorts of costumes and customs in Spain. Have you been donning a white pointy hat and wandering in the streets carrying religious artifacts at all, Alvaro?
Not my thing, James. Not my thing.
No? Okay. All right.
Have you been doing that in the streets of London, James? Or
no, very, very much not my thing. Let's find out what your things have been over the weekend with some moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. James.
I mean, was there a moment of the weekend in Serie A? I mean, there was a moment insofar as, AC Milan are subject to a offer from a investment funding based in Bahrain. Called
You're losing
InvestCorp.
Them.
So, yeah, 1.1 billion. I'll see what comes of that over the next fortnight. Milan won on Friday night against Genoa, 2-0. And I suppose... even with that win, it feels like the momentum in the title race has swung back into Inter's favour. We're recording this just before Napoli play Roma at the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona. But Inter have really picked up form since they defeated Juventus in the Derby d'Italia. They've won three straight. They have got the best run in, quote unquote.
Right. This is actually our title race talk rather than moments of the weekend.
Yeah, well, that's because there were absolutely no moments of the weekend.
I'm going to give you a moment of the weekend. How about Jose Mourinho making a pilgrimage to the shrine of Diego Armando Maradona on the streets of Napoli with security, a phalanx of bodyguards around him? He went there because Diego never forgot him. He used to ring him up when times were tough and say, "Never forget, Jose, you are the best." Jose revealed these intimate a moment. It was quite a touching scene, really, ahead of Monday night's absolutely huge game away to Napoli, who are also in the title race. Hey, more on that title race later. Let's see if Alvaro can sum it up a moment of the weekend.
I think that there is one in Spain. I believe that Real Madrid did made a decisive step towards the league title because they were losing against Sevilla in a very important game, 2-0 by the halftime. And in the second half, they managed to come back. I mean, Rodrigo, Nacho, and Benzema, who else, scored the three goals that did the remontada for Real Madrid. And yes,
again,
I would say that...
this is a match report. I'm looking for a moment of the weekend. Skip ahead to the bit where Courtois sat on the advertising hoarding talking to the fans. When there's the contentious decision that sees a third Sevilla goal ruled out for handball, and the fans are going crazy. And Courtois just sat there about a metre away from them, having a chat with them, pointing out where on his where on the arm, like was it above or below the sleeve line? Amazing picture.
Maybe in the Vinicius goal, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that could be a moment of the week.
What was the one you were going for?
I was going to go for Karim Benzema scoring the winning goal. I know that this is a little bit more conventional, but at the same time, I mean, we have to say this. I mean, Real Madrid only needs 10 more points to win the league, thanks to that goal of Benzema, and there are 6 games remaining. So I think that it was one of those decisive moments in La Liga, and I think that it deserves to be the moment of the week, yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, so huge was that win that that's where we're going to start this week.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1-5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Sevilla 2, Real Madrid 3. Alvaro, as you were saying, in La Liga. What a game this was. Sevilla going 2-0 up, and then Real Madrid, who were fresh from that 3-2 with Chelsea midweek, roaring back. Once again, it was Rodrigo scoring just a short time after coming on that got things underway.
Yes, I think Rodrigo this week has been really important for Real Madrid. The game started really badly for Real Madrid again. They have lost the last first halves, the last two, by 2-0. 2-0 at Bernabeu against Chelsea and 2-0 at Sánchez-Pizjuán against Sevilla. This doesn't mean anything, of course, because the football gets rated over 90 minutes, but it can be a little bit concerning if Real Madrid doesn't get their act together and they fix what's happening at the beginning of the game for them. But I would say that the game was very important for Real Madrid because they show again that they've got the spirit. And even when Sevilla went leading by 2-0 to the half-time, I think that everyone knew that Real Madrid had still like a goal or two in them. I think that the first half was very bad for Real Madrid. Militao was very exposed all the time, unable to stop Sevilla's counter-attacks. I think that Militao probably was missing Casemiro a lot, because Casemiro was suspended for the game, and with Casemiro he would have felt less exposed, that's for sure, more protected. And also, I think that in the first half something happened which was decisive for the course of the game. Camavinga had a yellow card, and he made a blatant challenge that should have been the second yellow card for him, and therefore he should have been sent off in the first half. But the referee didn't call that second fault, because he knew that if he called the fault, then that fault should be awarded with a yellow card. Well, Sevilla players couldn't believe that. Martial got injured as a result of that fault by Camavinga. Real Madrid stayed with 11 men, and they managed to come back. It's true as well that Vinicius scored the goal. It got cancelled because the referee understood that Vinicius touched the ball with his hand, and I don't think that that happened. I think that it was the shoulder. But anyway, Real Madrid won. Rodrigo got a goal, an assist. Nacho scored the goal after coming from the bench, and Karim Benzema scored the winning goal. And again, Karim Benzema was the guy who won the game for Real Madrid. And yeah, I think that he is going to be the MVP of the season for sure, because his contribution to Real Madrid has been capital, has been pivotal to win the title. They haven't won it yet, but as I said before, they are only 3 wins and 1 draw away from winning La Liga.
Benzema, 39 goals in 39 games this season. Extraordinary. He's now only 5.
Where's Jules when you need him?
Yeah. Charlie, can you play in a clip of Kareem the Dream?
The amazing thing is how that is now catching. I don't know. I imagine it was before Jules, but now I'm hearing like Italian commentators say it. It's
really
just remarkable. Yeah, yeah.
Hello, Italian commentators. Rodrigo va ad aggredire la linea di fondo. Benzema se la sistema.
Karim, the Dream, Benzema. Strangely, it hasn't been a thing in Spain. The Karim the Dream thing.
Mm-hmm.
You need to popularise it then, Alvaro, clearly.
Yeah, for it.
Come on.
No, there is no catchphrase for Benzema, to be honest. No, we don't have anything like that.
He's now just 5 goals off Raul's all-time Real Madrid goal tally, which is extraordinary stuff. Real Madrid 15 points clear of Barcelona, who play on Monday night. They're hosting Cadiz. They have got two games in hand, but as you say, Alvaro, it looks pretty much done and dusted. What about Barcelona, though? After Thursday night's ignominious exit to Eintracht Frankfurt, first real setback, I think I'm right in saying, for Xavi. What's the reaction been to that?
Yeah, playing away from home, at home.
That's the thing. I think that the biggest reaction, the one that still remains, the one that it's still a conversation, is that the fact that 30,000 Frankfurt supporters, they were spread around the Camp Nou. I think that the club made a massive mistake not being able to control who was coming onto the pitch, onto the stand, sorry. At the same time, it is Easter, or it was Easter time in Spain, and many socios, many season ticket holders, they gave away their tickets or their IDs. And, you know, after you do that, then there is no control of over who is taking that or who is taking your place. And Barcelona didn't control it. As a result of that, next season, Barcelona's tickets in Europe are going to be what we say nominative. So a name will be attached to it, and only one person will be able to go there, and they will have to identify that person before entering the pitch.
I have to say, Alvaro, I did see some of this reaction. I thought, well, that must just be a part of it. There must be a much broader discussion about where Barcelona went wrong in a game that they absolutely had to get right, and in a game that had been preceded by such great results for them. For them to go 3-0 down the way they did against Eintracht Frankfurt, coming back, but a little bit too late on to make it interesting in the final minutes. But that's been the big issue. How many Eintracht Frankfurt fans were there? Not what the team got up to.
Yes, it is now. It is now. But of course, on that night, there was a proper discussion everywhere about what went wrong for Barcelona.
Right.
Because there is an agreement that Barcelona didn't deserve to go through. There is an agreement that Barcelona was worse than Frankfurt over 180 minutes, because in Frankfurt they survived. And only a genius goal crafted by Frenkie de Jong and Ferran Torres got Barcelona alive in the tie. But then at Camp Nou, I think that the physicality of Frankfurt was unstoppable for Barcelona. But Barcelona weren't only outmuscled, but they were outplayed as well. And we haven't seen that in 2022 in La Liga. It's true that there has been some warnings. For example, beating Levante only 3-2. 7 days ago with a goal of Luke de Jong in the last minute of the game, well, it is kind of a warning, because Levante are 20th in La Liga. Also, the many injuries that Barcelona has been having haven't helped at all. Even Pedri is out now for the rest of the season. But of course, it looked like 3-4 weeks ago that Barcelona was not only in the right way, not only they were on the right channels, but also they were capable of competing with the best. And now what we can see is that, yes, they have to trust the process. Yes, the process seems to be the right one, but there will be many problems along the way, because Barcelona's defenders are, apart from Araujo, not very robust and very trustworthy. And also because some of the youngsters are youngsters, and by definition, they will have good days and bad days. So this loss against Frankfurt, it is a warning, of course, but there are many things that are working for Barcelona as well. And let's don't forget that from January until now, the run of the club has been sensational. I think that, you know, we have to understand that if a team is trying to rebuild themselves, these things will happen.
Absolutely. All right, that was the Barcelona perspective, but what about Eintracht Frankfurt, 10th best team in the Bundesliga? How did they feel about last Thursday's extraordinary result at the Camp Nou? We'll find out next when we speak to Christoph Biermann.
It's the Paddy Power Football Supporter Support Line, and we're talking to Man United fan Carl.
Yeah, and I'm worried about the trip to Liverpool.
It's the game I'd be worried about, Carl, not the trip.
Yeah, at least the M62 won't be one-way traffic.
It's not always rewarding being a Man United fan, but if you want rewards, you can get a free bet if one leg of your bet builder on Liverpool v Man United lets you down. Paddy Power.
Pre-match online bet builder bets only. Min 2 plus legs. Max 1 free £5 bet per customer. Must have previously deposited to avail. Eligibility restrictions and T's and C's apply. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Christoph Biermann, hello, live from Freiburg.
Hello. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you Two, you've been in Freiburg for a variety of reasons, including Borkum's visit there this weekend.
Yes, I showed up. They didn't show up. They lost 3-0. Never had a chance. But it was a good performance from Freiburg. And now they are eagerly awaiting their cup semi-final on Tuesday in Hamburg. Against Hamburger SV, and if they win it, it would be the first ever German Cup final.
Wow, okay.
The second semi-final is between RB Leipzig and Union Berlin. And also, I mean, both teams had played in German Cup finals before, but they haven't won it. The only team in the competition that already has won it is Hamburg from the second division, but that is a long time ago. I think maybe something like 1987 or so.
Okay. A lot of things to discuss this week, Christoph. Should we start with the Schwarzen-Gelben, though? Dortmund and their incredible 6-1 victory over Wolfsburg. 5 goals in 14 minutes. Wow.
Yeah, that was wow. And on the other side, shocking by from Wolfsburg's point of view. We've been talking about Borussia Dortmund and their in and out form every other week or so. But the story is similar with Wolfsburg. So they look stable the one week and then they completely lose it the other week. And I think from Wolfsburg's point of view, and that's true also for Borussia Dortmund, they are looking forward to the end of the season, an end of the season that wasn't satisfying. For different reasons, but for both of them.
It was Tom Roethe, was it, who opened the scoring, becoming the youngest player ever to score on his Bundesliga debut. He's just 17 years and, well, 169 days.
And a name, I guess, when they were reading out the team, I think most of the Borussia Dortmund fans hadn't heard the name before.
Mm. Hopefully they'll remember it. Then a name that they are familiar with, Erling Haaland, concluding his scoring drought, rather, with a brace, taking him to 33 goals in 31 appearances this season for club and country. One of those Borussia Dortmund games where they make you wonder why on earth they can't do this more often. On the subject of Erling Haaland, Christoph, any further indications about where his future lies?
Obviously, still Manchester City is a huge favorite to sign him. Let's see. I think what I've heard, his talks with Borussia Dortmund are more or less over. So there is no serious talk about extending the contract. So it's clear that he'll be going to somewhere, and the favorite so far is Manchester City.
Okay. In the meantime, Borussia Dortmund stays second in the Bundesliga, 9 points behind Bayern, who could win the title next Saturday when they play against Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, that will be maybe the last chance to give Borussia Dortmund a better feeling that they could get out of the season. But that's also true for Bayern now. I mean, to go out of the Champions League against Villarreal is shocking for them. And you can see that there's also already starting some kind of blame game. Whose fault is it? What went wrong? And is it a discussion we already had when Hansi Flick was coach? Is it that the signing that Bayern did, that especially Hasan Salihamidžić did, didn't they give the squad enough depth? Were they careful enough in their signings and so on? Is a team underperforming compared to Flick under Nagelsmann and so on? What's going on with Oliver Kahn? Where is he hiding? So you see there is a lot of discussion going on around Bayern. Winning the German Championship next Saturday would feel more like a consolation prize than actually getting a good feeling out of the season.
Right. It would be their 10th consecutive title, whereas going out to an unfancied, relatively unfancied side like Villarreal a bit more of a shock. They went out last year, I think at the same point, but at that point they didn't have Lewandowski with them, and that was felt like the key thing. Beyond issues over squad depth, is it, what's been the other main reaction in Germany?
A kind of disbelief, actually. I think nobody really expected it. And so maybe is there also a big cycle coming to an end? We have these great players of Bayern Munich that are getting older and older. Manuel Neuer, Robert Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, and so on. And right now, it's actually a bit difficult situation because also Bayern, they let, for example, David Alaba go, although they knew that he was a very, very important player. I mean, he's not only a good defender, but he was also a leader in the team. But they decided that they couldn't pay him as much as Real pays him. And so if you have this kind of limitation, will they be able to sustain the position as one of the teams that where you expect them to be under the top four in Europe? So that's a discussion that's also going on. And let's see where they end with it. I think it's open. It's a bit like they are trying to define their position for the future also, apart from all this more detailed who was playing, like and who should we have signed and so on.
And of course, a lot of it was down to Villarreal, Alvaro, no, and the way that they shut Bayern down, the way that they nullified the attacks, that extraordinary offside trap that they were running, and only four shots, I think, on target the whole game from Bayern.
Absolutely. I was expecting Bayern to do much more, really, to attack much more, to prove Jeronimo Rulli much more, to basically storm out there and prove Villarreal who was boss. And they didn't do that. They didn't do that. It was very disappointing by Bayern. Nothing to do with Hansi Flick's Bayern in 2020, when they were basically destroying you in every possible way. So yes, I was disappointed. I also think that Bayern had many players who could be slightly happier playing in another position. And I think that Sané probably is the best example. I think that he is too far away from influential positions. And then how vulnerable they were. Villarreal did one or two counterattacks, and they always managed to shoot in the box. One Danjuma in the first half, and then the goal of Samu Chukwueze. So I don't think that even Bayern took this game not seriously. I believe that they did their best, but Villarreal didn't find it so tough. And this is what I found very puzzling, very remarking, and very remarkable, and definitely something that I would have never expected.
Mm. And I totally agree with Alvaro, and that's a bad news for Bayern, actually. It didn't look like, oh, they were having a bad day. Actually, they had two bad days also in Villarreal, and also in the second leg. And if you have, and now it's there are more deeper lying problems that showed up, and they were even more visible because nobody expected Villarreal such a strong opponent.
Mm. I see on Instagram that Robert Lewandowski's wife is learning Spanish. She's asking for tips on learning Spanish.
Yeah, there is this rumor that Barcelona may make an attempt for him, but I think that this is still too early to talk about this. Yeah,
Barcelona.
Yeah,
crikey! All right.
It's too early to talk about this because first of all they have to sort out their salary cap. In January we learned that Barcelona is exceeding La Liga's salary cap in 200 million, so they'd better do something about that before trying to trigger in signing.
Crikey.
Don't they want to sign any Frankfurt players?
Yes.
They should. They should. They were so good. They were very impressive. And Filip Kostić, I think that he could have a really bright future in Spanish topside, definitely.
Well, Christoph, let's talk about last Thursday then, because there have been some shocks and surprises in European football this season. But that was one of the, I think, the standout nights, whether it was the invasion of Frankfurt fans. What was it, 30,000 all told?
So I think they were 30,000 in Barcelona, mm-hmm. and about 25,000 within the stadium, and I mean, we knew that. I mean, we already have been talking about it. So it wasn't like they were hiding, and then all of a sudden they came around the corner. And I really find this discussion in Barcelona very funny right now. How could they get the tickets, and what would you do wrong? Obviously, 20,000 Barcelona fans were not really interested in playing against this. What's their name again? Frankfurt team and didn't show up, sold their tickets, didn't buy the tickets, and now everybody is surprised that people are actually coming from Germany and wanted to watch it.
Yeah, and what would Barcelona do if they got to a final and faced large numbers of opposition fans as well? Not an issue, thankfully, they'll be facing now after this. What did you make of Eintracht's performance, though, on the field?
This game will stay forever in the history of Eintracht Frankfurt. Well, one of the side by side with playing in the European final in 1960, I think it was in Glasgow against Real Madrid when they were losing 3-6, and so that so far was the biggest game in the history, and I would say now this is on the almost in a way on the same level.
Ich fass es nicht. Ein Heimspiel für Eintracht Frankfurt, ein Traumtorspiel für Eintracht Frankfurt. Bang, bang, Boré, unter die Latte. Hallo Barca, das ist Eintracht Frankfurt. Hallo Barcelona, das ist Hessen.
People were so excited, and I think everybody in Germany was excited as well. So when you were following it on Twitter, a lot of people were saying, I did it. I would never expect myself to celebrate a Frankfurt goal in my life. Mm. And so it was electrifying. It was fascinating. European football is very often very clean and industry-like. And here we had this very fantastic, chaotic, emotional event that was created from the supporters, and I think that was I think even a lot of people from abroad that were like really impressed by it and liked it.
Just very quickly on the fans, James. Camp Nou has become a destination over the last 10-15 years just because Lionel Messi was playing for Barcelona and because Barcelona is a very popular city among European tourists and American tourists as well. Well, from all around the world, actually. So it's no news that there are many non-Barcelona fans at Barcelona ground. What it is new is that there are 30,000 away fans at Camp Nou spread around the pitch. And I think that this is a time for Barcelona to learn. This is a time for Barcelona to say, okay, this season we were getting it in the right way, because now at Camp Nou, you don't get so many tourists who want to see Messi, because Messi is in another city in the north of Europe. So this season, Barcelona fans as well, they were kind of rediscovering their team and linking themselves with it in a different way again, which was, in my opinion, a little bit more perhaps authentic. And what happened against Frankfurt was totally out of the blue. But this is a good moment for Barcelona fans to think again and just to start supporting the club in the good days and in the days that they don't look so good, like the day against Frankfurt. It didn't look appealing on paper, but Barcelona needed their fans that day.
How many supporters do you think Frankfurt will bring to East London, Christoph, for the semi-final?
I don't know right now what the ticket allocation is, and I think it will be much more difficult to get spare tickets for the away game in London, because I mean it's also a great match for West Ham. I mean it's not like maybe if it would be Manchester United or so, or if it would be Arsenal or Manchester City, they would say it's only the Europa League. But for West Ham, it's the Europa League, and for Frankfurt, it is. And so maybe there will be a lot of people go to London, but I think there won't be as many in the ground as there were in Barcelona.
We'll see. We'll look ahead to that game next week. That's coming up Thursday week, of course. In the meantime, Eintracht Frankfurt beaten 2-0 at Union Berlin this week, but they probably won't care too much about that. RB Leipzig, meanwhile, also in the Europa League semi-finals, and they are taking on Rangers. How are they looking, Christoph?
Pretty impressive. They have something machine-like at the moment. So everything is functioning very well. It's not, I mean, the away win at Leverkusen, the match was a bit dry, but it's, I mean, they had this difficult match in Bergamo. They have the, we talked about it, they have the cup semifinal to come in between. You have to go to Leverkusen, to one of the direct competitors for a spot in the Champions League. And they, in a very cold, composed, controlled manner, won it. And they are really in form. And for me, they're also a bit the... maybe even the favourite to win the Europa League. But let's see.
Dominik Szoboszlai with the goal there in a 1-0 victory. Excellent. Well, we'll look ahead to that fixture and the West Ham game and what's happened in Der Klassiker next week, Christoph. For now, thank you ever so much for joining us.
Cheers. Bye.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Alvaro, Villarreal, after dumping Bayern Munich out of the Champions League, are going to be taking on Liverpool next. They couldn't, could they?
It's the ultimate challenge. I really think this time that they won't be able to do it. But I'm not discarding them completely, okay? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and a certain percentage, let's say maybe a 20%, I don't know, of chances of going through. But I think that Liverpool is a better side than Bayern this season, definitely better than Juventus. And when they put the ball in the box, they put really good crosses in there. So Albiol and Pau Torres against Bayern, they didn't have to deal with very difficult crosses. But I think that what Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold especially do from the wings is very difficult to defend. I think that Villarreal may find it very hard. And without Gerard Moreno, it's going to be even harder, because we still don't know whether Gerard will play against Liverpool or not. It looks difficult that he'll be ready to play at Anfield. And let's see if he will be able to play in the second leg. He's got a niggling injury again. And this is the sixth muscle injury that he's suffering this season. So you wonder where Villarreal would be in the league, having had Gerard Moreno on form this season. Unfortunately, he hasn't been.
All right. Well, we'll look ahead to that game with an update on his fitness in next week's show, when we'll also react to the Copa del Rey final, assuming they've worked out by then when to play it. Real Betis against Valencia. We still don't know when the kickoff time is, or have they decided now, Alvaro?
James, you know that you get me there, right? I don't know if that has been 100% decided right now.
Okay, well, Monday lunchtime it wasn't.
Exactly. But right now, I don't know, because I haven't checked the latest news.
It's pretty amazing, though, isn't it?
It is. And it doesn't look right. But this is not the biggest scandal of the Spanish FA this week.
Oh.
A few days ago, the Spanish FA reported that documents from the FA and private audios from the FA as well had been stolen. They reported this on Friday, I believe. And today, Monday, a digital news website, El Confidencial, has published audios between Gerard Piqué and Luis Rubiales, the president of the FA, talking about how to make a deal with Saudi Arabia to host the Spanish Super Cup and how to share the money prize. We knew that Piqué's company, Cosmos, had been a facilitator for the Spanish FA. But what we didn't know is that the company of Gerard Piqué had got a commission for doing this, which is 4 million euro per Super Cup, per year that the Spanish sides go to Saudi Arabia to play the Super Cup. Rubiales, in a radio show a couple of years ago, he said that Piqué's company, Cosmos, never got a commission. And we got to know now that, yes, they did get a commission. Saudi Arabia is paying 40 million in total for Spanish clubs to play the Super Cup in their country. The Spanish FA keeps roughly around 20. Then Piqué's company is getting 4 million. And then the remaining money goes to the four participants. And there's nothing legally wrong here so far. Piqué's company basically is getting a commission for organizing an event. But there are many things that are morally and ethically wrong. For example, there is a conflict of interest here because Piqué plays for Barcelona and Barcelona normally plays the Spanish Super Cup. He can still play for Spain, Gerard Piqué. If he says he's available, Luis Enrique will consider that. And, you know, the Spanish FA and the Spanish national team are the same thing. And also, there is something that I think that this is the most controversial part. Gerard Piqué is openly discussing money with the Spanish FA president. Basically, he is telling the Spanish FA president how much money Real Madrid should get, how much money Barcelona should be getting, and how much money the other two participants should be getting. So basically, Gerard Piqué is saying something like Athletic Club Bilbao should get a million, Barcelona should get eight. And I don't think that Gerard Piqué should be involved in any conversation of that sort.
That's amazing.
It is.
Busy chap. Gerard Piqué. Trying to think of an equivalent figure in, say, the English game or indeed anywhere of a player who's still active, having that kind of a sideline and making so much of it. Extraordinary. Well, it'll be interesting to see what else surfaces from those stolen documents, Alvaro. But next up, let's move on to Serie A.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's good news for Watford fans as they get ready to appoint their fourth manager of the season. Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4+ legs. Maximum free bet is £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. Online exclusives and T's and C's apply.
Let's hear now from James Horncastle. James, semi-finals in the Taça do Liga, Taça do Portugal this this midweek. What do you think?
I did actually watch the Super Clásico between Benfica and Sporting on Sunday night.
Oh, yeah?
Sporting Club. Yeah, which was Benfica Catenaccio, really. It really was. I mean, six at the back. Darwin Nunes had no chances. And yet he scored one on a long ball hoof from Jan Vertonghen and then set up the other in stoppage time as Sporting obviously chased an equaliser because it really looks now like their efforts to retain their title have just gone completely up in smoke. Porto already miles out in front. So the Super Tassa, I can't wait, James. That and the Coppa Italia semi-finals.
Right.
We are spoilt for midweek cup action in Europe.
Indeed. You of course, were able to watch Super Classico on Sunday night because all the Serie A games had been moved to Saturday because Easter. Only 2 points between Inter and Milan, who are in first place at the moment. Napoli, as you mentioned earlier, will be hosting Roma on this Monday evening, and they can pull to within 2 points of the top themselves. Roma, who have got a busy week ahead of them, they've got Inter at the weekend, and then next week they've got Leicester in the Conference League as well. Yeah. Should we start off by saluting the fact that Roma are still in the Conference League?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are the last Italian team standing in Europe. And, yeah, what, in 3 of the last 4 years, they've reached a European semi-final. I think we did mention the prospect of them doing that. I mean, it's kind of quite remarkable that they've done it Champions League, Europa League and Conference League, all with different coaches. You know,
yeah, Inter Toto next season.
Yeah, maybe Seferin will bring that back. Fantastic. Yeah. And look, I mean, as much as it's easy to mock and say, actually, that's a sign of a club going backwards, you know, because they've reached semi-finals in the first tier, second tier, and then third tier competition. Yeah, to Roma fans, they don't really care about that because the only European trophy they've ever won was the Fairs Cup, and given they haven't won any trophy at all since 2009, when Spalletti was in charge. You know, they'll take it. I mean, it was quite interesting that the debate on Sky Calcio Club on Saturday night, where Paolo Di Canio, obviously a dyed-in-the-wool Lazio fan, but I think also you could say it was an intellectually honest argument, was saying, you know, why are we getting so excited about them beating Bodo Glimt at the fourth attempt? You know, when Inter played really well against Liverpool in a better competition, and yeah, okay, they went out, but yeah, that's something that should have been celebrated more than this, because you know, Bodo Glimt ultimately have got seven players who go on the docks every day or whatever, and they fish for salmon. That was Palaticania's take on it, which drew a few wry smiles. But you know, I mean, it is a big few weeks coming up for Roma, James. I mean, they are, what, 11 games unbeaten? And, you know, if they were to come through these games against Napoli and Inter, then they would be in a, they're already in a better than expected position that no one expected them to be in a few weeks ago, even. So, chapeau.
Well, indeed. The Bodo victory coming with a hat trick from Nicolò Zaniolo, who's the subject of much chatter about where his future might lie, whether he's going to agree a new deal with the Giallorossi. It was Tammy Abraham who opened up the scoring. But a victory against Napoli, were that to come on Monday, listener, it might already be a result you know about, would really make things interesting in terms of Roma's chances of making it back into the Champions League because of what happened to Juventus at home to Bologna. On Saturday, James, we were covering this live, and when you mentioned things that weren't expected to happen, I think Bologna opening the scoring is right up there.
Yeah, because I mean, Bologna have never won at the Allianz Stadium, and it looked like they might come away with a famous win. We've seen other teams do it for the first time this season, Sassuolo, Empoli, for example, and they were the better side. Juventus, yeah, really disappointing again, and. You could say in some respects that they've mirrored the season that, you know, Roma have had in that, you know, a great manager comes back, you know, in Roma's case to the league, in Juventus' case to the club. They put together these kind of long unbeaten runs, which, you know, they haven't always put in convincing performances. But I think, you know, this was one of the worst we've seen from Juventus this season. And I think, again, underlines how just signing Dusan Vlahovic alone isn't enough to solve their lack of invention, lack of creativity. And ultimately, they got back into it because right at the end, there was a tackle by Sumaro on Morata. Is it in the box? Is it out the box? It looked like it was a penalty at first, and then Sumaro gets sent off, and everyone's like, well, that's really harsh, triple punishment. But no, he was the last man. It's a free kick outside the box. Gary Medel loses his head and gets shown two yellow cards in very quick succession because of his reaction towards the referee. And then Juventus score a stoppage time equaliser. Morata bicycle kick to the far post. Vlahovic heads it in. And, you know, ultimately it may be an important point for them because, yeah, Allegri, as is often the case when his teams do well, he tends to be critical of the team. And when the team does badly, he tends to be more measured and kind of optimistic. And, you know, he was saying afterwards, look, we're taking it one step at a time. First half was fine. So we'll see. But they certainly have Roma breathing down their necks, pending, obviously, the result that our audience will already know about.
So yeah. Let's see. If that went Roma's way, they're now 3 points behind Juve. If it didn't, Juve got a comfortable 6-point cushion. Roma being the last Italian side in Europe, what do you make of their chances against Leicester?
Well, I think it'll be an open game. I mean, Leicester can't defend set pieces. I mean, we've seen this again at the weekend in the Newcastle defeat. Roma are exceptional at set pieces. That's one of the things that has underpinned their run and their season under Jose Mourinho. I think only Liverpool have scored more in Europe's top five leagues. I think it's 22 goals from set pieces. So that is certainly something that Roma will be looking at and think we can have joy there. But also, I mean, you have to say that since the turn of the year, you know, Roma have showed up in more big games than we're used to. This was one of the criteria on which to judge Mourinho on, because it was something that was held against his predecessor, Paolo Fonseca. And, okay, he hasn't beaten any of the sides above him in Serie A at the moment. But that performance in the derby against Lazio was sensational in the first half. Performance in the first half against Bodo Glimt, massive game, also sensational. And I don't think the city has got behind one person in this way since Totti retired. You know, in terms of they are all in on Jose Mourinho. And you look at the crowds and the atmosphere at the Stadio Olimpico at the moment. I mean, I think only Inter are getting bigger attendances. I think the Friedkin family have put a very competitive ticketing strategy together, which is like, you know, some tickets are between 5 and 14 euros. You know, I mean, 5 euros to go in the Distinti Sud, which is, you know, the kind of corners of the Curva, and then 14 euros for Monte Mario, which is one of the traditionally one of the most expensive stands to go and watch a Roma game in. And so you've got a combination of things. Mourinho, team doing well, competitive ticket pricing, coming out of the pandemic, capacity, your restrictions being lifted, all of these things coming together at the same time, which I think makes for Leicester going to the Olimpico, it will be a really difficult atmosphere, I think, to handle. So yeah, I think there's a lot of optimism, even though, final caveat, you know, in the Champions League in 2018, Roma lost in the semi-finals to a Premier League side, that was Liverpool. Europa League last year, they lost to a Premier League side, that was Manchester United. And they've drawn a Premier League side again in the Conference League. So let's see if this year is their year in that regard.
Indeed. Still, if we're mentioning precedents, last man to win a European title with an Italian side, it was him, wasn't it? Anyway.
It was. Mm. Yeah. So
Coppa Italia semi-finals, this second legs. The first leg was some way back in 2021, was it? When did they play the first leg? First leg, this is
6 weeks ago, James.
Feels like ages. Anyway, way back in the midst of time, Juve took a 1-0 lead in their semi-final with Fiorentina. It was goalless between Milan and Inter. And they are up on Tuesday night, I believe, with Juve Fiorentina on Wednesday.
Yeah, we mentioned at the top of the show how, Inter, really since the Derby d'Italia, it feels like they've turned their season around, that all of a sudden the momentum's back behind them, that they're playing, with the exception of that game against Juventus, which was a real backs against the wall win with one shot on target, which was a penalty, that they've started playing good football again. But this is an opportunity, I think, for Milan to actually, you know, maybe get into their heads a little bit. If they were to win this game and knock them out and reach the final, then I think that might have a bearing on the final few weeks of the title race as well. I mean, as much as Inter is running looks like the best of the kind of top sides, so Milan, Inter, Napoli, they've got obviously Roma at the weekend, and okay, they beat them 3-0 comprehensively earlier in the season, then knocked them out of the cup as well. But they also play a couple of the teams that are fighting relegation. I mean, you think of Cagliari on the penultimate day, Samp on the final day. Both of those teams could be fighting for their lives at that stage. Udinese come after Roma, and Udinese have been an awkward team for the top sides to play against so far this season. So, yeah, I think the outcome of the Madonnina in this Coppa Italia semi-final could still have another twist in the title race. It could foreshadow one anyway, so let's see.
Very interesting. Yeah, that game's actually on Tuesday. Not sure which way around I had it. And Juve Fiorentina is on the Wednesday. Let's conclude our Serie A section, though, James, with this huge deal, at least the way it's being reported, that was announced at the end of last week, or this huge offer for Milan by the Bahrain-based investment group InvestCorp. What can you tell us? How big's the war chest?
Well, Gazette, it's about 300 million. But from what I can gather, it would be a kind of continuity with what we've seen so far under Elliott, who have, you know, kind of turned the club around over the last 4 years, often being quite prudent. They did spend a lot of money to begin with. You think of the amount that they invested in Paquetá and Piontek, deals that didn't work out whilst they were kind of still figuring out how this football business works. But yeah, since then they've done something that's kind of, I would say, unprecedented in football, but goes against the grain in that they've, you know, kind of cut operating costs and become more competitive. It usually have to spend more to get better in football. So in prospect, it's one private equity group that would replace another. However, Investcorp could walk away, Elliott could walk away. I think one of the things that's quite interesting from all of this is that with the reporting of this offer from Investcorp, you know, other investors are now asking themselves the question and saying, oh, right, okay, AC Milan may be available. And, you know, we've seen how much interest there is in football clubs and how much money there is kind of swirling around at the moment, just following the kind of the auction for Chelsea. So it wouldn't surprise me if there was to be more competition for the prospective acquisition of AC Milan, because ultimately, yeah, Elliott, the fund that runs it at the moment, could decide to keep it, and that's not the right time to sell. But it's a fascinating time for this particular space of the football market, if you like.
Mm. Fascinating time off the field, James, and on it. Well, we'll see what happens with the Napoli-Roma this evening, and then the Coppa Italia and all that. And big games coming up next weekend, not just into Roma, but also Milan away at Lazio. So it's going to be another biggie for that title race. Still to come on this Totally Show, we'll hear from Julien Laurens. And next up, in the Netherlands, Michael Jongsma.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Is it nu Gakpo die de bal heeft? Gakpo, nog altijd, schiet, Gakpo! Doelpunt! Doelpunt, Cody Gakpo! In 1 minute tijd draait PSV de hele wedstrijd om. Het is Gakpo!
Now, joining us on the line is Michael Jongsma from the Netherlands. Hi, Michael, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, James. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Listen, I should warn you that Michael's downstairs neighbours are doing home improvements on Easter Monday, so that might be a factor in our conversation. But Michael, first of all, tell us about the cup final on Sunday.
Yeah, that was quite a game. Ajax against PSV, the two best teams in the country. They've been that for a few years now, I would say. And Ajax were the overwhelming favourites coming into it. Especially because PSV had played Leicester City in the Conference League a couple of days before that. Even though Ajax managed to grab the lead through a fine goal by Ryan Gravenberch, it was PSV that in the end managed to get the win by a two-goal blitz just after halftime. And after that, after PSV went up, Ajax never really seemed able to disrupt PSV as much as PSV were able to disrupt them. So. Quite a surprise, I would say, and a bit of a stain on Erik ten Hag's probably final season as Ajax manager.
Mm, interesting, the word probably creeping in there, because reports out of the Netherlands over the weekend and post game were very much of the club suggesting that he might not leave after all, that it's by no means a done deal with Manchester United.
Well, when it comes to Dutch media in general, they do think that it will happen. Erik ten Hag doesn't have much to win at Ajax anymore. He's taken them to the Champions League semi-finals, was close to the final there. At the moment, when you look at the state of the squad, it's not what it was a few years ago. And apart from that, the one that helped him build the club up the way it operates now is has already left in Mark Overmars, and obviously there were really good reasons to dismiss Overmars a few months ago, but it has left Ajax in a bit of an influx. And to be completely honest, like, Ajax are in a bit of a precarious situation, I would say, because with Ten Hag leaving, a few of their most valuable assets already gone, and some top talents about to leave as well. It is very interesting to see how the rebuilding of this team will take shape.
Mm. Yeah, not necessarily a smooth handover. The last multiple title winning manager to move on. Frank de Boer, curiously enough. It took a bit of time for Ajax to sort themselves out after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even Erik ten Hag came in after Marcel Keizer, who succeeded Peter Bos before that, had done a mediocre job, I would say. And I mean, that's kind of how it goes with Ajax managers. Ajax is a notoriously difficult club to manage, especially if you're an outsider like Erik ten Hag is. He managed to win everyone over, has done an incredible job. But since Louis van Gaal left in 97, there have been only three managers that have been able to hold out for two seasons or longer. And I think that says plenty about how difficult it is to find someone to do that job properly. And as it stands, like, there's no real clear favorite to take the job. A few of the names mentioned are Peter Bos, who had done a good job before, but he's still at Lyon. Alfred Schreuder has been an assistant manager there. He's been named as well, but he's at Club Brugge at the moment. It kind of leaves Ajax in a very, very interesting situation. And I'm really curious to see which way they're going, because their squad is aging. They started five players of 29 or older in the game yesterday. So it's not that young, vibrant, European football darling that it was a couple of years ago.
Interesting. And also, is there a danger that it's not just going to be next season that proves difficult, but even the end of this one, that the whole confusion or uncertainty could impact on the run-in? They're 4 points clear of PSV, four games to go, which feels like a decent advantage. But having seen PSV beating them on Sunday, what do you think?
Well, PSV haven't been great this season either. And Roger Schmidt, who's supposedly departing for Benfica after this season, hasn't been the great success that everyone hoped for. But they do have a good squad. Their spirits are up, obviously, after winning the cup for the first time in 10 years. They have a fairly easy run-in, as do have Ajax. But Ajax have two difficult away games against AZ and Vitesse, whereas PSV still have to face Feyenoord. So I think both of them will drop points. So a four-point lead should be enough for Ajax to get it over the line. But as we've seen recently, Ajax have trouble to see out games. They've had narrow games, narrow victories against teams that are well below them in quality, like Sparta and RKC, teams that you'd usually expect them to sweep 5-6-0. And if that trend continues, and what you saw against PSV was that after they fell behind, they weren't able to just recuperate in a way that you usually expect them to do, then yeah, it will be interesting. And the fact that Erik ten Hag hasn't been able to sort a few of the flaws in the team out at the moment is slightly concerning. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Ajax drop 4 points, but it's effectively five because they have a superior goal difference. And that I think that will eventually get it over the line, but it's definitely not a completely done deal, I would say.
All right, unfinished business, much like your downstairs neighbours.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, I hope you enjoy the rest of your bank holiday weekend, and we'll catch up with you for an update on the Eredivisie title before the season, or when the season comes to a close, perhaps.
Well, that sounds excellent, and I hope my neighbours are done by then.
Mikael Jongsma. Next up, let's hear from Jules in France with Le Classique and much more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Joining us now on the line, literally from France, Julien Laurence. Hey, Jules.
Hi, James. Hi, everyone.
Lovely to hear from you. Hope you're enjoying your Easter break. I hope you managed to take in some of that top league action, not least Sunday night's huge Le Classique, PSG Marseille.
Yes, of course, James. There was the the game of the weekend in Ligue 1, certainly, even if, despite, I guess, all the excitement and expectations before, didn't really live up to it because it was a pretty boring game or pretty dull game. I think Sampaoli was a bit criticized for the minimalist game plan that he had, and he said after the game it would have been suicidal to play any different than what Marseille tried to do. And in the end, PSG won 2-1. There was a lot of VAR controversy, a lot of goals disallowed through VAR or checked via VAR. In the end, maybe PSG slightly deserved to win it, although I think a draw maybe would have been fair too. But it was between first and second, even if there was a big gap between the two, I think a lot of people expected maybe more intensity, even more beef between the two teams. We only had a bit of aggro between Guendouzi and Neymar in the second half. But apart from that, it was a pretty normal game, which is not really what we expected from such a big rivalry and big game.
Soporific, that was the verdict of Thierry Henry.
Yeah, for most of it.
Not helping the lack of intensity was the fact that there were no away fans and the PSG fans were pretty much silent. The collective Paris Ultras, basically with a vow of silence in protest. Why was this? What are they protesting about, Jules?
It's still the backlash from the Real Madrid defeat in the Champions League and what we saw before. So they didn't go as far as booing the players this time. But before the game, they were quite indecisive on what to do. I think some of them wanted to be fully behind the team because it was Le Classique and the game against Marseille, and a win would have brought the 10th title closer to the club. And I think the other half were like, no, we're still not happy with the season, how the season went. This is not good enough for a team like this. So let's keep showing how unhappy we are or the discontent. And that's what they did, because you're right, the atmosphere, certainly from the two ultra, like the ultra groups behind each goal, was not what it would usually be for a game like this. You know, no choreography, no tifos, no songs really. Of course, when PSG scored and the Neymar first goal especially, the stadium cheered, but it was nowhere near the atmosphere that you usually have in a game like this. You're right, the fact that the Marseille fans, as it's been the case for the last maybe 5 or 6 years, no away fans are either allowed at the Parc des Princes or the Vélodrome. That obviously takes away a lot of the atmosphere that you can have in a game like this. So yeah, in the end, between what we saw on the pitch and what we saw in the stands, it was pretty underwhelming, to be fair.
I see. Very whelming is the fact that they are now 15 points clear, PSG, of Marseille, and can seal the title on Wednesday night when they take on Angers, if they get a better result than Eum do against Nantes.
Yeah, you're right, James. And obviously, it will be the tenth title, which only Saint-Etienne has ever done in French football history. Mm-hmm. And you're allowed to put a star on your shirt if you get to 10 domestic titles, and then 2 if you get to 20, like it happens, for example, in Italy. Some clubs decide to do, some don't want to do it. I think PSG have decided not to put the star for next season's shirt, for the 10th title. Instead, there might be something on the sleeve, or there might be something a little bit different, but there would not be a star.
I see. Any particular reason for that, Jules? It's nothing to do with Red Star Paris or anything, is it?
No, I don't think it's with Red Star. I think maybe the most simple of reason, Jimbo, is that the shirt for next season have already been made by the kit maker. So
there was no way of anticipating that the title would have been coming. Yeah,
you never know. You don't want to jinx it, you know.
So. No, that's true. Mm. All right. Elsewhere in Ligue 1 this weekend, Lens beat Lille in the Derby del Nord. Lyon, who got embarrassed by West Ham last Thursday, managed to bounce back by beating Bordeaux 6-1. Crikey.
And like L'Équipe put it on Monday morning, the headline was strong against the weak. Ah. In fairness, this sums up so well Lyon's season, in the sense that, as we saw against West Ham, when it's a big game and they have to step up, although I know they beat Porto, for example, the previous round of the Europa League, but still, they fail, and they fail as we saw against West Ham. So they clearly are good when they are the better team, but when they have to raise their game, they struggle and they fail. And this is part of the season. We know that Peter Bosz is very likely to be sacked at the end of the season. Remember, at the turn of the year, Jean-Michel Aulas, the Lyon chairman, gave him an ultimatum and a deadline of February to keep him or to sack him. They decided to keep him, and then we saw what happened. You know, they're nowhere near good enough in the league, and that defeat against West Ham was hugely disappointing because they really thought they could go all the way in that competition. So despite that 6-1 win against Bordeaux, who are in all sorts of troubles, of course, second from bottom, that win doesn't reflect at all where Lyon are right now at a club, and the future is not looking great, to be fair.
Lyon's fans also protesting. Was there a boycott for that match, Jules? And what was that about?
Yes, they didn't turn up, the ultras especially. So there was a lot of empty seats at the Groupama Stadium. And maybe more importantly, they turn up at the team's hotel before the game, 50 or 60 of the ultras, and starting being quite aggressive towards the team to show again how unhappy they are. They were very unhappy at the end of the West Ham game on Thursday night last week, where they tried to get onto the pitch and somehow failed because he was protected by the barriers and also by the steward, who did a really good job to prevent maybe 20 or 30 of the ultras to get on the pitch to confront the players, I think, also the technical staff, and maybe go all the way towards the director's box where Jean-Michel Aulas was. So I think we avoided something much bigger after the West Ham game, but we knew they would not leave it there. And indeed, they went to the team's hotel before the Bordeaux game to be quite aggressive towards the players, because I think there was a lot of good things done at the start of the season. But the way the season went, it's just been a nightmare for the fans. And they will very likely miss out on Europe again next season, which will be the second time in the last 3 years, which for a club like them is unacceptable.
Currently 4 points off even a conference league place. Could be worse, Jules. They could be Saint-Étienne.
Exactly, James. Although the nice story of the weekend comes from there, because you remember last week they lost 6-2 at Lorient, where they were after being 2-0 up. And in that game, their captain, Madi Camara, maybe the best player, wasn't there because he'd been suspended by the club, because the previous weekend, while he was playing in the stand, his mum and brother had an altercation with someone in the stands. The brother had a fight with that person. Turned out that that person was the reserve goalkeeper, the Saint-Etienne reserve goalkeeper. So then when Madi Camara learned about who that person was, he went to meet him at the training ground and smashed his head up. So the club was like, listen, Madi, you are the club captain. You cannot do that, even if that person obviously had beef with your brother the day before. You can't go and smash his head up. So they suspended him for a week, which meant he missed that game against Lorient where they were humiliated. And he was back this weekend because he was suspended for a week. He was back this weekend, and guess what? He scored the two goals in the 2-1 win to win and boost their hope of staying up next season. So Madi Camara, very much the redemption, James, of the club's captain.
Right. By the way, is it true that Saint-Etienne, in their bid to avoid the drop, have asked their Muslim players to stop fasting for Ramadan?
Yes, that's right, James. Pascal Duprat, the coach, thought that to be able to stay up, he would need everybody with full energy for every single game coming up now, which means that for some of them, and they've got a few, who are fasting at the moment every day, he thought that training, they wouldn't be able to be at their best. And then in certain games, from what I was told, I don't think many enjoyed the proposal from the coach. So I don't think many will end up breaking their fast to do that. They said, listen, we can play our best, even if we respect, you know, one of Islam's main festival in a way. So, yeah. So I don't think that went down well. But yeah, that's what Duprat believed. I'm not really convinced either that was a good idea in the first place.
No, I think a lot of people would strongly disagree with Pascal Duprat's idea. And certainly from a sporting point of view, the likes of Karim Benzema would suggest that you can
exactly
fast and still be fast. Race for Champions League places, top two occupied by PSG and Lyon. Behind them, only 3 points between Rennes in third and Monaco in fourth after those two teams met this weekend. How'd it go, Jules?
Yeah, Monaco won that one, James. Really, really good game. Monaco, remember, not so long ago, all the stories coming out of the owner, Dmitry Rybolovlev, the Russian oligarch and billionaire who wanted to sack the new coach, Philippe Clement, the sporting director, Paul Mitchell, and the club's president who's running the club on a daily basis, Oleg Petrov. He'd had enough. They were out of the Europa League in a disappointing way against Braga. They were a bit struggling in Europe to try to finish in the top five. And since then, they've won all their games and they're coming back into the league. And you're right, they're even hoping to try to catch Marseille. They won because Wissam Ben Yedder is such an amazing player. He's 31 years old, but his eye for goal and that awareness is still there. And even if he's not maybe as sharp as he used to when he was younger, you know that you give him one chance and he's going to score. And that's exactly what he did. It was a really good game. And Monaco, to be fair, were worthy winners. And Philippe Clement is doing a really good job to the point that now Rybolovlev is thinking, maybe I should not sack them all. So he might just sack the president and keep the sporting director and the manager for next season.
Jules, that's magnificent. When are you back from France?
Tuesday, James. Very much looking forward to coming back home.
All right. Just in time for Liverpool Man United, of course. Huge. Excellent. Well, bon voyage, mon ami. And we look forward to speaking to you next Monday, Tuesday.
Perfect.
Well, there you go, listener. That's been a broad-ranging romp around the continental football scene. Many thanks to Jules and Mikhail and Christoph earlier and Alvaro and James. And now we'll get the gang back together next Monday, when of course we'll have the semi-finals ahead of us in the various European competitions. Crikey. Have a great week in the meantime. From all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.